HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 42, recorded Monday, November 20th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100. Online at codesmithtools.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss next-gen gaming.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott Hanselman. This week's topic, Scott, is next-generation gaming.
That's right. You're not a gamer, are you, Carl?
You know, no, I'm not a hardcore gamer. I mean, I've seen and played a few games that I've liked, and they were a nice diversion for a while, but I have, like, an addictive personality when it comes to technology and things that I like, so I have to try very hard to not get sucked in. And, you know, I'm sucked into code, I'm sucked into music and production and development, and those are, you know, that consumes enough of my time and money and energy. Now, if I got into gaming, I think I'd be a freak.
One of the things about gaming in general and the personality types of people who will play 50 hours or 100 hours of some, you know, RPG, some role-playing game, is that you kind of forget that you're playing against another bunch of programmers. For me, it's like when I start playing a game, about a level or two into it, I go, wait a second, am I playing a game or am I fighting with another programmer mentally? You know, once I figured out how that programmer thinks, then I go and say, all right, well, screw it. I'm not going to go to level 80 just to see that I am, prove that I'm a badass.
Right.
But which brings us to kind of the topic of the day, which is this notion of next generation gaming, right? We had the PlayStation, the regular Xbox, and they had a good run, and a lot of really cool stuff was done with the PlayStation 2, with the original Xbox, and to a limited extent with the GameCube, although that was to a different audience. And now suddenly, kind of all at once, although the Xbox 360 has been out for a while now, you've got a Christmas holiday season that's coming up here with the Xbox 360 in easy availability. Buy one anywhere, and they're about $300. And you've got the PS3, where you'd actually have to give a kidney to get a to get one of these, and they're about $600. $600.
Yeah.
There's two versions. There's a 20 gig hard drive version, and I think there's a 60 gig. So 60 or an 80. But you're looking at $600. And then there's this weird little thing from Nintendo called the Wii, the Nintendo Wii, the WII. I've been talking to some different guys at work, because a lot of programmers are also gamers kind of at night, about what does it mean to be a next generation game. And most times people will say, well, you know, you've got to have high def, right? And we did a high def talk.
Hey, Scott, let's get back to that Wii for one sec before you jump into that. My kids have the Nintendo DS, you know, the whole Nintendogs was the thing that sold them on that.
Right, and the little portable one.
And I have a little bit of a history with them because we did some podcasts for Nintendo on the DS. But what's the diff between that and the Wii?
Well, the Wii is really interesting. Everyone was laughing about the name. They're saying this is going to be stupid. It only does 480p, so it doesn't do high definition. But just as they aimed at a totally different market with the GameCube, the Wii is just flat out fun to play. The deal is that the Wii is a tiny little thing. It's actually smaller in size than the Xbox 360 add-on DVD player. Give you an idea of how small it's about the size of a five and a quarter inch internal drive for your desktop. Very small, just like the GameCube is just so tiny. The deal is, it has Ethernet, so it'll hook up to the net all the time, and will let you download any Nintendo game ever, going back in time. So you're talking about Nintendo 64, Nintendo, SNES. Super Nintendo, you want to play Mario Brothers, you want to play whatever, you'll be able to download those off the net. But the really amazing thing about the Wii that I think is going to surprise a lot of people, that they're going to have to actually touch it and try it, is this controller. it's got, it doesn't have a standard kind of hold it in your hand controller. If you want one of those, you have to buy it separately. It's called the Wii Classic controller. It comes with two remote controls. You hold them in your hands, like literally like a remote control, a tiny remote control. And if you want to have Zelda, you know, the little elf in Zelda swipe a sword, you hold the remote and you slash in the air.
Nice.
If you want to play tennis or baseball or bowling, you just make the motion naturally.
So it's got gyroscopes in it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's got you know, six axes of motion detection.
Nice.
Totally, but a totally revolutionary kind of thing. Now, there's been lots of motion detection devices in the past. There was all the gyroscopic controllers that we saw, the gyro, what is it called? The gyro remote that you can point at a Windows Media Center and control the mouse. But this is basically saying we're going to rethink how games ought to be played. I went and played with one for a while, and they had a car driving game. And I was like, well, how are they going to adapt this to a car driving game? Well, you take the remote control and you hold it in your hand lengthwise with one end in each part of your hand. And you just rotate your hands left and right like you're holding a round steering wheel.
Wow.
And you drive. And it really, really works. It's $250.
That's crazy.
So for the price of a single PlayStation, you could buy a Wii and an Xbox 360. So they're pricing it at the kind of, oh, that's fun, right?
Right.
Let's just pick one up. I mean, like, I'm thinking about getting one, and I'm not even a Nintendo person.
Right.
It's a really, really clever thing.
Scott, let's get back to the whole idea of what next-gen gaming is.
Yeah, so people usually say that next-gen gaming means high def and 5.1 surround, and they're always arguing about, well, do you want 1080i or 1080p, right? Do you want your high definition to be interlaced at 1080 horizontal lines or progressive? Now, that's the big kind of argument right now. Everyone says that true high definition, which is kind of an arguable point, is 1080p because that's simply the highest and best quality. But very, very few high def, you know, TVs actually do that now. More and more they do. So, you know, in a year or two, they'll all be like that. But nearly all the content is at the sweet spot, which is 720. Mm. And if you do the math, you have to actually sit about 4 feet away from a 1080p screen, if that screen is about 42 inches, which is kind of the standard size.
Right.
You have to sit 4 feet away to really notice the difference. So if you're sitting on your couch 10 feet away in a standard 42-inch screen, there's really no way with normal eyesight you can tell the difference. So the whole graphics resolution argument breaks down real quickly. There's the quality of the 3D, like how strong the graphics card is. And they say that the Xbox 360 and the PS3 are pretty darn close. I've looked at the games close up myself, and they look real similar. You know, what they call a second generation game on an Xbox looks a lot like a PS3 game. They're saying that at a math level, the PS3 is slightly stronger. It's a newer machine. It's a more powerful machine. It's got more chutzpah than the Xbox 360. But the Xbox 360 has 2 years of people learning how to program to it behind it. So it's kind of a balance. So there'll always be that religious VB versus C-sharp kind of argument. You know, they're both really awesome things. You know, pick the one that makes you happy. I do think that $600 is a heck of a lot of money to spend on something. Regardless. So I would, you know, I'm an Xbox 360 guy myself. Additionally, the Xbox 360 has just recently announced, and I guess it's coming out in about, well, actually it should be out by the time this podcast goes live. We're doing this on a Monday. Mm-hmm. We'll go live on Wednesday, the 23rd. So on the 22nd, they're going to allow downloads from an Xbox of television shows and movies in high def.
Wow.
This is hot.
Now, so when you say they're going to allow, who's they?
So Microsoft is going to change the Live Marketplace, which is the online site that you log into when you turn on your Xbox. Huh. So, you know, Carl Franklin missed Lost this week. You could sure go up to iTunes and pick it up. Or you can just log into your Xbox and pay a buck or two and download it in full high def.
Nice.
Now, it's not meant to be burned or shared, but it's meant to be watched. So you might theoretically download a movie rather than going to Blockbuster, and you'd see that movie in high definition. So that's pretty powerful. Now, it'll be highly compressed, but arguably you'd rather watch a compressed movie at 720p than a compressed movie on a DVD at 480p. So that's a pretty powerful thing. So while they're launching the PS3 and the Wii, they're really aiming at different people. I think that the PS3 is aimed at PlayStation fans. The PS3 is backward compatible, so they're saying it'll play any PlayStation game ever made. I think the way that they're doing that is very different than the Xbox, because the Xbox allows most games, about 250 Xbox games, to be played, but it's all done with emulation, which is very clever. The Xbox 360 uses a totally different processor, totally different architecture, totally different graphics card, and they have a software emulation layer. But you can play, 250 of the most popular Xbox games. On the PS3 side, I understand that they've actually just included a PS2 inside the thing. So they've actually got that whole hardware duplicated. But by doing that, they're allowing you to do whatever the heck you want and play any PlayStation game ever.
So let's not focus on compatibility. Let's just shove the old box in the new box.
Well, yeah, because remember the PlayStation 2 came out with a big version and then a slimmer version. This is a thing that Sony does. They'll come up with the next version when the manufacturing process becomes cheap enough to make it small.
Right.
And, the PlayStation was out for a while, and then the PS1 came out, and it was about the size of a CD because it became really cheap, right? Now you can go and buy an Atari 2600 for like $25.
Right.
And if you open it up, it's the size of a cell phone. The rest of it's just air, right? It's an entire game system on a chip. So, cool idea for them. So the PlayStation's for the absolute hardcore, wants the 1080p, highest quality, don't mind spending $600. The Wii, I'm thinking about getting one just because the wife saw it and said, well, this is going to be fun. We could play tennis together in this interactive way, because she doesn't like the controller. Mm. But when we got the car driving controller for the Xbox, it made sense. So I think a lot of casual gamers and some women who have not really been attracted to gaming might find the Wii to be really attractive. Playing bowling on it is a blast. I mean, you're literally just moving your arm like you would be bowling. And it happens on screen. So it's a real kick. And I think that it could allow a lot of party games, a lot of casual games with family and younger members to all be involved when a Quake or first-person shooter really isn't friendly. So yeah. I think the Wii is going to succeed when people poo-pooed it. But the really cool thing I think is happening on the Xbox side, not to sound too much like an Xbox fanboy, is not just the idea of reinventing this live platform. I mean, they reinvented it by including arcade downloads. So if you have an Xbox, you can download Frogger or Pac-Man, Street Fighter. So they've built in an emulator and brought that software emulator down when you buy these games. Not just the adding of the television and movie downloads, but this XNA framework that I know you're interested in.
Well, yeah, and this gets us to, what's the story for developers before we get into XNA? Developing games used to be like, it was the sort of the dream job of the hacker slacker, right? The hacker used to be motivated by the fact that, well, if I can just break into enough systems, somebody will hire me eventually to keep the nasties out.
Exactly. Hacking as a resume.
And I think the same thing is going on with gamers. Like, if I just play enough Halo and I can understand the mind of the programmer, then I can learn how to program games and then get a glorious job somewhere working for, Electronic Arts or something like that and retire.
It's the Counter-Strike dream, right?
Right.
When Half-Life 1 came out, it included an SDK, which was a really revolutionary idea. Like, here's our game and here's a way to make your own using our engine. And a bunch of kids in college wrote Counter-Strike, and it became the most played game on the internet for a number of years and still is really up there. And it was written as a mod, and then it became a whole world, and these guys became game designers. So what I think is cool about XNA, which is the Microsoft Framework and Game Studio based on Express, is that by Christmas time, what you'll do is you'll spend $99. It's a yearly subscription, and you'll become part of this XNA club that will let you publish your games that you wrote in C# up to a community site. And people who have paid this money, this $99 kind of initiation fee, will be able to download your games as well. And it's pretty sweet. So XNA is this framework. It's a DirectX-based kind of framework, but it's a managed library or series of libraries that's kind of based on DirectX that, but is really, really focused at making games. So it's almost like someone said, we need a base class library, like the .NET base class library, but we want it to be focused on nothing but games.
Yeah.
Controller management, just abstracting all that stuff away, taking all the DirectX APIs and making it simpler. While managed DirectX, or I think they used to call it MDX, was really just managed APIs on top of DirectX. So, it, right. You know, you could look at it as almost like the way .NET 3.0 is just trying to abstract the fundamental business problems that business people have. XNA is abstracting away the fundamental problems that gamers, game developers have away and giving them on kind of all that managed stuff. So it's basically based on, the development environment is based on Express, like Visual C Sharp Express. So you get a Visual Studio-like environment. And then there's also a thing called the content pipeline, which is the creation of 3D content. It makes it easier to manage all of your assets. When gamers are creating textures and sprites and 3D models, those are called assets. So there's a content pipeline because you might have a developer who's making the game engine while there's a content or asset maker who's going to be the artist creating all the content. So the management of that kind of stuff. So you'll pay this money and it'll let you write games based on the XNA framework. And the runtime is going to be free. And to develop, it'll be $100 a year. But eventually you'll be able to publish this stuff out and it has a cross compiler. So basically it's got a custom version of the .NET runtime for the Xbox 360. So that'll be a platform that you will compile to. And then you'll compile to Vista as well. Although right now the development environment only works on XP Service Pack 2. Mm-hmm. So theoretically anyone with XP Service Pack 2, Vista, basically Windows or Xbox will be able to play one of these games. And this is a really interesting move from Microsoft because I was at Target a couple of days ago and I saw a game that looked like it was a game for a console, right? It had the DVD case, the standard size, the standard banner across the top. And I picked it up thinking it was an Xbox game. It said Games for Windows. So it was a rebranding and a restyling of gaming as if Windows itself and your PC was a console. And this is a movement, I think, that you're going to see in Vista and the new Games Explorer, which if you go in Vista and you look for the Games Explorer, there's a section there in Vista that will say, here are your games. You'll have a picture of the box of the game. You can click on the game and it'll say, we recommend a Windows Experience Index of 4 for this game, and your hardware is a 3.5. So it's kind of an integrated experience as well as an integrated install and run experience. You want to just put the game in and have it work. And that's part of this whole Games for Windows. It's kind of like, it's like Plays for Sure, but for games, right?
Well, you have a certain amount of infrastructure in the box when you run Vista that you don't necessarily have with XP. XP has been around for a long time, and it didn't come with DirectX, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, right. And the DirectX is now on version 9.0, yeah. Subversion 3. And there's also the DirectX shaders. These are these pixel shaders. There's a thing called Shader Model 2.0, which basically all the new fancy video cards have. But I think they're basically saying if you're spending $400, the price of a console, on a video card, you're serious about your games working. Mm. We would like the infrastructure for all of your games to work appropriately. You spend $400 for a console on a board. Like, you've got a pretty kick-ass video card, if I understand, right?
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I've got, you know, for a person who isn't like a hardcore gamer, my video card is a little over the top. One of the reasons that I got such a fast video card, and I have one that has two dual-channel DVI 512 meg chips on it. So it's basically two video cards. So I could run two of those big Dell 30-inch monitors if I wanted.
Right. So you're in a sweet spot. You probably have, and this is an NVIDIA card?
NVIDIA chipset. And the reason that I have that is because video rendering uses the GPU. So when you're sitting there and you've got like a 2-hour video or something like that that you need to, you know, with a whole bunch of different tracks and fades and wipes and blends and titles and everything else, when you render that down, you know, if you don't have a fast GPU, you're going to have to run it overnight.
Yeah, exactly.
Or more. And I was very happy to see that the software I'm using, which is Sony Vegas Video, which is run on .NET 2.0, by the way, also has support for network rendering, which is very cool. You can delegate.
Delegating. We used to do that with, what was that thing called? It was a ray tracer back in the day. And you basically had as many machines as you could throw at it. And I think that all the big Pixar and those guys have fields and fields of Linux boxes that do parallel rendering.
Right. That's how you can basically solve 5 minutes and you've got your movie. But another thing I wanted to say is when I just got this new mother system online and I've been editing a video with it. And when I got it, the video card came with a Lara Croft Tomb Raider, 9 or whatever it is, or whatever the latest Tomb Raider is.
Sure.
And I popped that thing in and I ran it at the native resolution of the 30-inch monitor.
That's like 2048 by something.
Yeah, 2050 by whatever, 19.2 or something like that. And the thing ran at 60 frames per second.
That's hot.
At that resolution. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. That's the kind of stuff.
I was very impressed.
Yeah, and soon that video card, in a year or two, that'll just be on the motherboard. It'll just be standard.
Right.
And you expect that kind of quality.
Right.
Right. And you'd hate to have to go through a whole big convoluted setup process to make that experience work. You'd like to put the CD and have it just happen.
Yeah, it was pretty nice.
So there's the movement for games for Windows on Vista, which is if you've got a machine and it has an experience index at a certain amount that says that you're going to have a good experience, you've got a good video card and a good processor, your Vista box should work like a console. So I think next generation gaming isn't just the decision about PS3 versus Xbox 360 versus Wii, but it's also maybe I'll put that money into my video card and we'll start seeing things like, Call of Duty 3, which you can totally get for your Vista box and have a great experience, or Brothers in Arms or some of these games. So people will look at that as being another kind of console. It won't necessarily be on a giant monitor, but it'll be a good experience and a different kind of experience. But I think that Microsoft's making some pretty ballsy moves, frankly, forgive my French, for saying we're going to support you putting user code, homebrew code, on an Xbox. Because you know that there's the whole the PSP, the PlayStation Portable, has actually been updating the firmware every other month to keep the hackers from hacking. Like you said, people have broken into the PSP and they've included all sorts of cool things, emulators for older arcade games, Outlook style personal managers, personal information managers, and then the next version of the Sony firmware shuts it out, locks it down. I think the issue is that the hackers hate to see really awesome hardware in their living room that they can't do anything with.
Yeah.
I mean, the Xbox itself, and you mentioned this to me offline, Carl, that the Xbox, the original Xbox, has some really great Media Center software. That's an alternative to Media Center.
Right.
People are starting to hack into their Xboxes as long as they don't take them on live, or they'll put a switch on the Xbox to prevent the Xbox from being banned, because if Microsoft sees a modified Xbox go onto their network, they'll shut it down remotely. They'll make it sick. But people are using these Xboxes as poor man's media centers, and they're actually pretty darn functional. Yeah. Why not let us write the code in C#, do our own thing, and give us a sandbox to play in? And I'm pretty stoked about it. I think you're going to see a new generation of game developers. You're going to see young people get excited about this kind of stuff.
I do wish they had a VB version of this XNA toolkit, though.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know the technical reasons for that, but it is C# only. It's .NET 3.0 and
C# Express.
C# Express. And what it is actually is it's a custom implementation, not of the .NET framework, but the .NET Compact framework, which I don't know. I don't know the difference there. There's some subset of APIs.
A lot of stuff missing.
It's more like the API. It's more like the Compact framework that you would be running on your smartphone than it is like the Compact framework you'd be running on your full-on VistaBox. But if you simply use their APIs, you develop your game, you don't worry about those kind of things, you just use the APIs that are given to you, when the version comes out that lets you, in this Christmas, that lets you put this onto your Xbox, you just say, oh yeah, and target the Xbox, and it'll just work. So then you'll be able to play your games on Windows and on the 360. and share them with people. So I think it's only a matter of time before we see a really kick-ass game that was written entirely by regular folk turn into something that, you know, someone could charge money for. So I think that next generation gaming, kind of like to sum up, is less about the technology and the hardware and more about what the experience is going to be like. Let me just kind of sum it up like this. I've been playing this game called Gears of War. It's a violent game. It's a shooter, and it's not for the squeamish. I wouldn't recommend it for anyone. It was a, you know, anyway, you should be playing this if you're out of high school, frankly. It's pretty bloody. But, you know, you could just say, oh, well, it's a shooter. But this game, yes, it's got great graphics, and yes, it's got Dolby, but rather than a first-person kind of walk around on a rail, up, down, left, right, you know, Halo type thing, which is we've all seen a million times before, it's done with a camera over the guy's shoulder, so it's a third person over the shoulder, and as you run, the camera kind of rocks back and forth as if you were being chased almost by like a wartime journalist who is following you with a camera. And the faster you run, the more the camera shakes. If you don't have, and it's cool. It's really immersive.
That is cool.
It gives you this sense that you're really there. And as you shoot, you don't have a shooting, what I call a shooting reticule or a heads up display. You don't get an aiming deal unless you actually sit down and aim the thing. You can run up against barriers or like if someone had overturned a couch or a car, you can go and slam yourself up against it and then use it as cover and then shoot blindly by like just putting your gun up over your head and shooting over the car. But of course, you're going to be less likely to hit something than if you were actually aiming. And the cool part is that, you know, you spend a lot of time managing the camera when you play these games, right? Basically, one of the thumbsticks on the controller manages your head. But they've got a button, the top button on the controller, the Y button, which is the look at interesting stuff when it happens button, which is such a clever idea because you spend so much time managing the where am I looking, where are my feet? That can be really frustrating. But if you hear a noise, maybe a rumbling, maybe there's bad guys coming or a door has been knocked down, you hit this button and it'll automatically turn yourself towards that thing that's making the noise and then tell you what the heck you're looking at. So these bugs come out of the ground. You hear this rumbling off the screen. You push this button, turns your head towards it and says, emergence hole. Someone's coming out of a hole. Bad guys are coming.
Wow.
You know, it's context sensitive, right? And that's about usability. It has nothing to do with the graphics.
Yeah.
Which gets to the whole thing about the Wii. If I want to play, you know, bat and hit a ball with a baseball, like a baseball bat, I swing it.
And how do you spell that Wii?
It's W-I-I. So W-I-I.com or /K5H. I think W-I-I.com is a little easier. Which gets into the Sony. The Sony has the identical controller as the PlayStation 2, which that controller used to rumble. Like, you know, if you get hit, the thing would shake. They've removed that feature and introduced an axis, six axes. So you can turn it, move it side to side, forward and backward on any of six axes. Now, they haven't pushed that as much as the Wii, because the Wii is a whole new way of thinking about controllers. I mean, if you want a regular old controller, like I said, you have to buy one.
Right.
Almost all the games are different. You play Legend of Zelda, you move with one hand, and you swing your sword with the other. Well, on the PlayStation, there'll be more traditional ones, but they may make it so if you're boxing, you push the controller quickly forward. Or if someone in a game is trying to grab your gun, you shake the controller back and forth. But they're still kind of working those things out. The Sony's going to, but it has that capability, the PlayStation 3. They also have the capability to plug your PlayStation Portable into the PlayStation 3 as like a possible alternative monitor. So like imagine like you're playing a Star Trek game, it might be your tricorder. So you'd look down at your PlayStation Portable and it would have another screen and tell you something about radar or something that's happening around you.
So you basically have this one thing with thumb controls in your right hand or your main hand, and then this other sort of contoured joystick
alternative thing
in your other hand.
And it could, what you might think about this, you might take the PlayStation Portable, put it next to your high def TV, and it maybe it's your rear view mirror.
Yeah.
or whatever. Those are the kind of things, and they're all going to be chances, right? We're all taking chances. They don't know which one of those is going to define next generation gaming. But the whole point of gaming, right, is to be immersed. On the Xbox, it's a standard controller and a high def TV. But wow, I felt immersed just by the way the camera moved. Like, yeah. The difference between Call of Duty 2, which is a first generation Xbox game, and Call of Duty 3, just changes in the way the smoke is rendered, changes in the way the gaming experience is, makes it another generation. It makes it a whole new way of thinking about gaming. I think it's pretty cool that the Wii people, the Nintendo people are so edgy that they would take a chance on this, a whole new way of thinking about controlling.
Well, they've always been cutting edge in terms of what you can do with video games. I mean, who would have thought, you know, a virtual dog on a screen, you know, taking the Tamagotchi.
Yeah, that's bizarre, but kids, they think they're real. They carry them around. It's like
my kids were completely obsessed. And I say were because, you know, they have ADD also.
Yeah, these things burn out
after 3 weeks later,
a while.
The dog dies and, forget it.
Well, it was like those little pendants kids used to carry around with a little tiny
Tamagotchi.
100 by 100 screen. Tamagotchi?
Yeah.
And they would basically, you know, keep this animal alive, this virtual animal.
Right. So, yeah. So, Nintendo's always been, you know, about not just the going for the, not, you know, they do shoot 'em ups, but they also go for these alternative kind of things. And they've always been.
Without chasing the hardware. None of the Nintendo hardware claims to be the cutting edge. They're really more focused on the gaming experience.
Yeah.
And frankly, they're winning me. I mean, I'll probably pick up a Wii because it seems like such a clever idea. If you've got a bunch of family members over and you want to play something casual, play a little baseball, play a little tennis, I think it's a lot more fun to use the controller like that. I hope the PlayStation does the same thing and uses the controller like that.
The biggest problem for me with video games, Scott, is just what you were saying. You know, pick up the thing and do a little tennis. I mean, you know, most of the time the learning curve on some of these games is just like, you know, by the time you figured it out, you know, the guests are ready to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like stuff that's discoverable, that's simple, you know, that, you know, within 20, 30 seconds you can be playing the game.
Well, you know, here's an interesting marketing thing. Take a look at the Wii.com, right? Wii.com. And they've got a thing called the Wii Showcase Gallery. And this is very clever. I got to give them to this on the marketing side that they kind of beat everybody. Is they basically put a bunch of random people in a room. They put a camera pointing at them. So you get their face shot. And they record them experiencing the controller for the first time.
Yeah.
They don't even show what's happening on the screen, basically. They just like, here's some people and their experience in the controller. You see them make mistakes and learn and eventually kind of get a certain sense of, oh, wow, this is cool. I get this. It's like the very first time you touch an iPod and you just go, oh, neat. Yeah, I totally get this. I think that's clever. And they basically have this gallery and it's a world gallery. So they'll say, here's people in Spain learning to use it. Here's a family in Japan playing baseball. Here's a random lady in New York learning to play tennis. And they just move the controller in a natural way, and it works.
I think that's good.
It's interesting to see these different gaming systems taking a different tack. You've got Microsoft. They've got the connected living room, you know, being able to download games, connect to your pictures, your digital, you know, your digital pictures. I had people over yesterday. I plug in my digital camera and I show them a slideshow. You know, it just works. You got the PlayStation, totally cutting edge, 1080p, super high def, highest quality hardware, you know, and it plays every PlayStation game ever. So they're not going to risk losing anyone in the PlayStation world. Then you've got the Wii, 480p, but a totally different kind of way about thinking about how to interact with the system. And then you got Vista trying to exploit the hardware that you've got sitting on your desk already, right? Your machine, you're running Vista, right?
Yeah, in fact, I'm just installing it now.
And you're running the 64-bit version.
No, the 64-bit version requires registered drivers, of which there are none. So,
that sucks.
If I didn't want it to use the hardware, yeah, I could run that. But
at some point, though, Vista out of the box should be a great gaming system for pretty much any box.
You know, Scott, you were talking about Media Center stuff. And have you seen Photo Story?
Yeah, I have. Photo Story makes videos with pans and movement with integrated audio.
Right. So, you know that, you know, the great Media Center feature of the slideshow where the things move across and fade in and out of each other.
Right. It's very subtle, but it makes the slideshow feel more.
Yeah. The Ken Burns effect, I call that.
Yeah, exactly.
So the photo story does that. You just point it at the pictures that you want to use and you give it a background music track, and it also record your microphone, right? And then it just shows you these things and it compiles it all to a WMV at the same time.
Right.
And when you're done, you narrate the pictures. Oh, this is when, you know, we went to blah, blah, blah. Oh, here we go with this and that. And you get some background music and you get your microphone. And it's pretty cool that you can just take this video and then send it to somebody and say, here, check out these photos. The photo story is at shrinkster.com/K5L. And Scott, before we wrap up, are there any other resources that you wanted to point out before we...
Well, the XNA stuff, the FAQ is at shrinkster/K5C. You can learn more about Xbox 360 Homebrew at shrinkster/K5G. Of course, we mentioned Wii.com or WII.com. Definitely check out... also, Anand Tech did a Xbox versus PS3, very technical, kind of at the CPU level, showcase at shrinkster/K5J. Info on the PlayStation 3 is at the PlayStation site in the U.S. at shrinkster/K5K. There's an interesting video up on YouTube at shrinkster/K5E where they basically explain what the point of XNA is and what you can do with it. And, you know, I think you brought up a good thing. Even though that discussion of photo story might seem kind of orthogonal to the discussion, it really gets to the issue of what are we using all these systems for? It's to create and to kind of reach out. And I think that whether it be the XNA letting you write your own games, the idea that a 15-year-old kid might be able to sit down and write their own video game, or my mom could sit down and write a narrated slideshow with all of the photos that she's got from trips and then send it to someone, and it would just work. Kind of gets to the whole point of all these machines, which is having a really good experience. And I think that the next 4 or 5 years of hardware, of consumer hardware is all about the experience, right? I mean, the Zune that the Microsoft just released is an attempt at, you know, Microsoft said, well, we like the iPod, but we feel that the experience is about socializing. So we want to be able to transmit music from device to device wirelessly. All of this just trying to push the extent of experience. We should probably do a show on UX, on user experience.
Yeah.
And kind of the renaissance that's happening around experience on the web and architecting a really good experience for a user.
As Richard Campbell says, every time somebody says the phrase Web 2.0, another startup dies.
Yeah, totally.
All right, Scott, that's a great show. A little off track from the usual developer topics, but very interesting, even for a non-extreme gamer such as myself.
Non-geek gamer? Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks very much, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.